section of Brooklyn, New York.
He's a three-time world heavyweight champion who ruled by intimidation.
Beat me if you can. Survive if I let you.
Taz would pick up guys nearly twice his size and drop them on their heads.
He is a human suplex machine.
Now he's bringing his no-nonsense New York swagger to the podcast world. This is Taz.
The mood is about to change.
The Human Podcast Machine.
Hey guys, what's going on? My name is Taz, and I hope everybody's doing good out there. Thank you very much for downloading this particular episode of the Human Podcast Machine. My special guest will be the coach from ESPN, Jonathan Coachman. Most of you know him from his fame in WWE and obviously on now his all success on ESPN. I really think you guys will enjoy this interview with Coach. I'm telling you, he was just a blast to interview. He gives a lot of insight to his experience in WWE, his respect towards our business, what he's doing at ESPN, his transition from the business to ESPN. And is he going back to the WWE? Who knows? You need to listen to this this interview in this episode. I'm telling you, it's insightful. You'll dig it. Really had a blast talking to my man, Coach. So that's coming up here shortly. Also, I'd like to talk briefly about JBL. JBL made some comments that maybe offended some people, and JBL did the right thing, went on Twitter and kind of addressed it and attacked it right away. He made some comments about, well, he didn't make comments about it, I should say. He made a comment about Luke Harper doing a high spot, which was Eddie Guerrero-esque, and people took offense to the way JBL made his comment. Now, I didn't hear it. I had to go back. I watched the show. I watched Raw, but I had to go back and listen to it. Listen, let me tell you something. Cut the guy some slack here. I've done this before. Things have come out of my mouth while I'm broadcasting a wrestling match and doing color commentary, live especially, live, and it comes out the wrong way. The match happens so fast. You have no idea the speed of these matches, how much stuff you have to get in, and how quick the pure speed your brain has to work as words come out of your mouth. I'm telling you, it's different than doing any other, calling any other sport. And I've been in JBL's position where things have come out of my mouth the wrong way, and I've offended people, and not on purpose. It just happens once in a blue moon. And that's what I think is going on. That's what I should say has happened with JBL. Cut the guy some slack. And trust me this much. I haven't talked to JBL in a long time, but I back in the day, I know for a fact, I could attest to the fact, JBL and the late, great Eddie Guerrero were very, very, very close friends. There's no way in the world JBL is going to disrespect the Guerrero name, his family, or Eddie himself. I could promise you that. And JBL's not that type of dude anyway. So just cut the guy slack. People making a big deal out of nothing. Came out of his mouth the wrong way. That's that. And the other thing I want to say is this episode here going to be a little different. At the end of it, I usually have a Taz tale. Not going to have a Taz tale. Not going to do a Taz tale. Don't get mad. Don't get mad. It'll be back the following week. Taz tale's not going anywhere. The coach interview is a full Monty. Don't want to overload you with audio here. You know, I don't want this thing to be too long and people get bored. I'm not into that. So that's something you need to know. And also I want to thank everybody for the great reaction to my reaction. And I dropped a podcast on the Triple H interview he did with Steve Austin on the WWE Network, the podcast those guys did. So thank you all for downloading my reaction to that. It got great response, and it's still getting a lot of downloads. If you haven't listened to it, please give it a listen. I think you'll enjoy it. I'm pretty frank and honest, like I usually try to be out here, best of my ability. As long as I can keep my integrity within the business, right? So that can get hard, right? But I got to be honest with you guys. So anyway, if you haven't listened to my reaction to the Triple H interview that he did with Austin, you can find it on play.it or radio.com, iTunes. Just search Human Podcast Machine or whatever. If you listen to this, you know how to find me. So wherever you find my show, that's where you could find that particular reaction show, R2. Reaction 2, the R1 was the Royal Rumble reaction. So R2 was my reaction to the Austin podcast with Triple H. All right, enough of that. Jonathan Coachman from ESPN, he's next.
Hey, the Human Podcast Machine will be right back.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Okay. All right, welcome back to the Human Podcast Machine. As I said, my special guest in this episode is here, or on the hook, I should say, the one and only ESPN's own Jonathan Coachman, the coach. What's up, brother?
I got to be honest with you, Taz, that from where our relationship started to the fact that I am a guest on one of the very first episodes of the number one podcast in America, my heart is full. I can't believe that this is happening. Can't believe it's happening.
First off, that was an extremely disingenuous comment. I'm not surprised, because I know you. But here's the cool thing with this, bro. As you know, you and I, we have not technically spoke. We've spoken via text, but we haven't spoken in years. I don't know how long since you left WWE, probably, right? I guess maybe.
At least seven, probably longer than that. Probably 7 or 8 or 9 years at least.
Wow.
At least. I mean, we've texted, but you're right. But this has been the first time, so it's cool to hear your voice. And this is a thing that dudes can do that women cannot do. They can go a long period of time, not speak, and then come right back on. And whether they're on the air or not on the air, just pick up like you never left off. So that's the cool thing about being a guy.
It's funny that you said, and you're correct. And it's funny that you said that, because my first guest, you know, a while back on the Human Podcast Machine was Edge. You know Edge very well.
And of course.
Edge said the same thing you said, because I hadn't spoken to Edge in a long time neither. And then he said the same thing. That's what you know, guys do. Just catch up. And, you know, I'm noticing a pattern, Coach. I don't speak to anyone for a long time.
See, here's the thing. Because the one thing that you never want people to think about, Taz, the Human Suplex Machine, all the different nicknames that you have, is that you actually care, or that you're in any way soft. So I feel like you developed this podcast to reconnect with people from your past, but at the same time say, oh, it's just for the show. It's just for my show. I don't really like this person. I just think they can help me and help me stay at number one on iTunes. And you know what? You came to the right place, because you're right. I'm a star. I'm at ESPN. So we're on the same page.
I love you, man. I missed you. Oh, God. You're the man, bro. Let's talk about your success. All kidding aside. I mean, before we get into, like, you know, look, when you come on my show, like, we just have a conversation. That's what we're doing. It's not
sure,
really an interview,
sure.
You know. So, like, I want to talk a little bit about ESPN and WWE and all that stuff. But, you know, I was not shocked, and any of us that were WWE announcers back when you were, none of us were surprised at the success you've had at ESPN. I don't think so. I don't want to speak for those guys, but I would think that they all got it, because you were always just so smooth on the air, and your background was in real sport before you came to WWE. So, But hosting SportsCenter, and how many times you've done it, who knows, and your own radio show at ESPN, I mean, what a dream that had to be for you to come true, hosting SportsCenter the first time you did it.
Taz, I can remember like it was yesterday, because even though I spent 10 great years in the WWE, we all have different dreams, and we all have different things we want to do. For me, growing up, really from being a little kid, I wanted to do it, but really when SportsCenter became big in the early 90s, it's the one show I always wanted to do. And I always said, if I could ever walk into that studio and sit in the chair and just be a part of, you know, I say even one show, then I'll have known I've made it on some level. And the very first night I got to do SportsCenter, which was, gosh, back in 2009, so it's been, you know, almost 6 years ago now.
Nice.
And I've probably done, I own thousands of them. But I do a little thing where I walk into the studio because I do feel that being a part of an iconic brand like SportsCenter, before me, it's going to be here long after me, is special. So every single day that I walk into the studio, from the first day on, I kind of take like 5-10 seconds, pause, and then I go in, I do my thing, because I don't want to ever forget how special it is that for those 2 hours, I'm one of two guys, or part of a duo, if it's a female, that are the only two people doing a show that everybody in the United States knows what that show is.
Very cool. So you're basically, you take a few seconds to acknowledge and appreciate the opportunity that you have.
100%.
I respect 100%. That. I did not know that. I think that's very cool that you said that. I don't do that ever. But I should do that. I should do that, bro. I should. I really should. And you know, and speaking of like everything you're doing at ESPN all these years, and I know that was a goal of yours, and I love when I see guys that work hard and complete goals, and you did, and it wasn't hard. I mean, were there struggles, being that you did start in real sport back in the day, then you went to WWE, and again, we'll get into WWE in a little bit, but were you typecast, for lack of better terms, coming out of WWE, and you were an on-air character, not just an announcer in WWE?
Yeah.
Hard, right? Had to be hard.
It was, you know, I haven't talked about it a lot, but it was very difficult the first 2 years, probably at least, because there's always going to be people, and when you work for the Disney company, there are always going to be people that are closed-minded, have preconceived notions of who you are, what you are, what you've done, without so much as probably watching 1 second of what we used to do. And I know you feel this way, that anybody that's ever either stepped foot in the ring or been a part of pro wrestling, regardless of the company that they worked for, if you get a little bit of a taste, you will never be condescending, short-sighted again, because you will understand how difficult it is to do. You also understand the kind of talent you have to do, whether you're being an announcer, speaking, wrestling, or trying to do both.
Right.
So I had bosses that were very close-minded when I got to ESPN. Luckily, the boss that was hiring was not that way. And after 2 years of, they did several things to, I believe, try to get me to leave, because they did not want to have a guy who had pro wrestling background. I believe that. I could be wrong, but that's how I felt. And luckily, some changes were made. We have a new president who's tremendous, and the people he hired to be his next in line, they're fantastic. They understand that we don't do journalism at ESPN. We do entertainment. So pro wrestling and ESPN are not that far apart. And when they started bringing in The Rock and John Cena and all these guys to be on SportsCenter and be guests for radio and all the different shows, I went to him, I said, listen, you can't treat me this way if you're bringing in guys that I used to work with and you're acting like it's okay. And you're treating them like $1 million.
That's a double standard. And that's a double standard if they're doing that.
100%. So there was a definite time period where I felt like, okay, I've arrived, I've made it. And to be honest with you, the radio show, when we started coaching company a few years ago, that was the really big difference, because then I could be myself. We could use the nickname, which has been my brand, and you're as great a brander as there is in sports entertainment. You understand how important the brand is. Jonathan Coachman's boring. Well, what's Jonathan? But when you say, hey, there's the coach.
Yep.
Hey, the coach. There's that brand there, and now they let me use it, which is cool.
I'm going to ask you. So it's funny you said that about the coach, about Coach. When I knew you were going to ESPN, I was very happy for you, but the thing that was in my brain, I'm like, God, it sounds crazy, being a sports fan as I am. I'm like, how is this guy going to be called Coach when he's actually surrounded by guys like Herm Edwards, who's a legitimate coach? You know what I mean? They call you Coach. It's kind of cool.
We talked about it, and there were a couple of coaches. Seth Greenberg, who used to coach at Virginia Tech in the ACC, and he's coached for 20-some years, and now he's at ESPN. He was actually bothered by the fact that when him and I would do college basketball together, that I'd be, we'd say, hey, welcome back, the coach alongside Seth Greenberg, and he would actually say,
he was hot.
You know, he was hot. And I mean legit hot, not like playing up on TV hot. I'm talking legit hot. And he would say on the air, I can remember when I was a coach. I can remember when I actually got wins for coaching on the sideline.
Oh, shit.
And I looked at him, Dad, and I said this on the air. When you can buy your action figure at Toys R Us, you can call yourself coach.
You better
Until then, this is how we're doing it. And nobody else has a problem. Herm Edwards loves calling me coach. All the guys are cool. But it's taken some time, but it's fantastic now.
I really did. I'm telling you, that went through my mind. I'm like, how? You know, that's a great story you just told, by the way. And speaking of like, so your work, like when you're doing SportsCenter, I mean, some people might not know. I mean, obviously, you're working off a teleprompter. I mean, and the prep work has to be insane because you're watching B-roll, right? You're watching footage. You're calling footage. Try kind of give an overview if you don't mind.
Well, here's the thing, and I do nighttime shows. We're kind of separated into highlight guys that can do highlights, and then we have anchors that are better at doing the interview type sports centers during the day when there are not as many highlights. But I write everything myself, and the only thing that I use off teleprompter is when you see us on camera leading to a game or talking about something, there is a copy in the teleprompter.
Okay.
That I don't let anybody write for me. I write everything myself. However, when you're doing highlights, and say you're doing the 11 o'clock Sports Center, and a game ends at 11:15, you don't have a chance to watch that highlight before it airs on Sports Center. So you have to have the knowledge, the preparation, the talent to be able to call it on the fly
and
tell a story.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are so many things that I've taken, Taz, from the pro wrestling world into ESPN that other anchors will say, how did you figure out how to do that or that? And I say, listen, I did this for 10 years. And what I mean by that is read and react, which we do calling wrestling matches all the time.
Of course.
The allowing the storyline to breathe. Instead of just calling what's on the screen, anybody can watch and see that guy had a three-pointer.
Right.
But can you tell me he hit it from 25 feet, that he was 3-for-5 from three-point range, and that he had 28 points as a season high and one off his career high as a junior in college? That's the storyline, and those are the things that you need to know before you go in. Preparation is huge, and I felt like preparation in wrestling was just as big, so that you respected the guys in the ring to tell their stories,
right,
to help their characters and respect where their characters were going.
Well, as you know, as a former pro wrestling announcer or sports entertainer announcer, I mean, you know, it's the same thing you just said about a guy hitting a three-pointer. I can easily say, hey, coach, he's got a headlock on. Yeah, Taz, yeah. He's got a headlock. Instead of us telling a story about why he has a headlock on or what he's done, you know, his backstory.
That's right.
You know, because you're not calling radio. You know,
that's
you're
right.
Calling, right. You got it. So, I mean, I think you and I had that, we have that in common where we came up as wrestling announcers under the WWE brand and banner, you know?
Right.
And I could say a lot of negative things creatively or storyline or about WWE and a lot of positive, but I will say I owe them a boatload. I mean, learning how to be a broadcaster. Just in general, and it's helped me like with this podcast, and I could see like your transition or Todd Grisham, his success. You know what I mean? Like guys that are announcers from WWE that segue out to other things in the world.
And I think you made a lot of good points right there. And Todd is my best friend for one, but he kind of solidified when he came here 3 or 4 years ago that it wasn't just kind of a one-hit wonder type of thing with me. And on some level, and I think Rock felt like this when he really started to make big-time movies, is that I'm incredibly proud to be the first guy to go from WWE, which is the biggest sports entertainment company in the world, and come to ESPN, which is the biggest sports, you know, company in the world. And one thing that I enjoy doing, just like when wrestlers were trying to become broadcasters, and there's a certain skill set that you have to have and embrace it, and that's the one thing that you did, was embracing the process and embracing what you need to do as an announcer, but also understanding that you can't lose sight of the fact that the reason you're there as the quote-unquote caller analyst, if we're making sports analogies, is that you know what it feels like to take or give a suplex or give a body slam or give whatever the move might be.
Right.
And I enjoy helping guys, that a lot of athletes now, because it's a way for them to make a really good living after they play. There's more athletes that want to do sports broadcasting than ever before. And they pay thousands of dollars to learn how to do it when they get done playing and then hopefully get to some network. But they don't realize how hard it is.
Yeah.
And they just think everybody can do it at this level. And I say this all the time, Taz, whether it's WWE or ESPN, this is not the minor leagues. It's the major leagues. And you better be able to hit a 100-mile-per-hour fastball or you're going to go down to the minors.
Yeah.
And you may not get the call back up to the majors again. So you got to be ready to play at this level.
Totally agree with the analogy. It's a perfect analogy. And I think a lot of sports fans out there don't realize all these great athletes, once they hang up the cleats, you know, or sneakers or whatever, or basketball, whatever, that they do go and spend money, learn how to do TV.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them we don't see on an ESPN ever. They might end up on a different brand, but or a lower level or you know, more of a regional, you know, sports. And
that's right.
Because it is very hard. But you've had the opportunity to work around some of the best athletes in real sport, along with great broadcasters. And unfortunately, as you know, and I know he was a good friend of yours, you know, we lost recently Stuart Scott, and maybe you want to talk real quick about him. I know he was a great, not only a great you know, sportscaster, and
yeah.
I heard he was a great person. I never had the opportunity to meet the man, though.
He was, for a kid like me, Taz, who grew up loving sports, addicted to sports, the only thing that I ever truly really wanted to do growing up. And when I was in high school, he began at ESPN, and then, you know, right my last year, and then as I got into college, and I would watch him, and I would think to myself, I felt very connected to him, because I knew that on some level I wasn't your normal in-the-box broadcaster, even back in college. It just wasn't my style. I'm not in that box.
Right.
And even watching through my 10 years in wrestling, I knew that if I didn't get out at a certain point, and I would continue to watch him and the star that he became. So when I got here, I expected this big ego, a guy that was so far up the totem pole that he couldn't see this far below him, and he was just the opposite of that. And I was blessed. His office was 3 feet away from where I'm at. And so we had a lot of late nights where we would talk about a million different things that had nothing to do with sports. And the first night that I got to work with him, that was a very, very special night for me, because most people never get to work with one of their heroes, one of their idols, one of the guys that you looked at and you thought, if I could ever get there, I don't know what the journey's going to be like, but if I can get there, and I can be with that guy, or I could talk to that guy, and I could get the advice, then that will be an incredible moment. Because I believe life is full of moments, and that's the only thing you can take with you. Stuart Scott created a lot of great moments for a lot of people. He loved sports. He loved his two daughters. And you and I can both respect the heck out of doing whatever it takes to be a good father and doing what you need to do for your kids. And I respected the hell out of him. It's been a very, very tough 2 weeks. But his legacy is certainly going to live on, and hopefully something good. I'm hoping at some point we come with a cure, because somebody at 49 years of age who's healthy and has a love for life should not be losing that battle. And I know he's not the only one, but you can use the fact that he was so well known to put some spotlight on cancer research for the minority community, because it's a different battle. And I think that's at least what we can take out of Stuart Scott. But he was great, and it was like working with a hero.
Well said, Coach. I mean, well, so I don't know what to say after that. It's tough to segue out of that. But, yeah, it was definitely, like I said, I never met the man, but I was a fan of his work. And God, ESPN done some great package imaging after he passed. And for those of us that never knew him, the production end of it was so good that you really felt like you knew this guy even more after those packages that they aired. So great job by ESPN on that.
I think you just, real quick, I think you just hit the nail on the head of why this hurt all of us so much, is that, Taz, wrestling and sports are alike in this way too, in that you feel like you're part of whatever that person is doing. And on a Sunday night at 11 o'clock, and you want to see the recap of whatever favorite game that you watch that afternoon, afternoon, that was the voice, and I'm one of the voices that brings it to you. You feel connected that way because sports, it throws race out the window, and anybody is allowed to love a Seahawks-Packers game on a Sunday afternoon.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what you are. And I think that's what sportscasters and ESPN and other networks, too, bring to the table. So. Sorry to interrupt you there.
That's all right. No, it's cool, bro. Speaking of sportscasters, I got to tell you, you know, recently, as we know, Rex Ryan, you know, left, you know, was gone for the Jets, and then he ended up being the Buffalo Bills head coach. And I got to say, there was so much scuttlebutt that this guy would end up in TV, not go to coaching, maybe end up at an ESPN, as a on-air personality and an analyst. Internally, what can you say? I mean, was there a lot of talk about Rex Ryan? Were you surprised that that didn't happen?
I don't think there's any question that we would have entertained the thought of bringing Rex Ryan in. The difficult thing to do right now is hiring somebody if you know they want to get back into coaching. Because you can make a really good living at ESPN, but if you're going from making $4 million a year to $500,000, just throw a name. That's a big difference, and especially if your name is still hot. So I wasn't surprised that he didn't come. I was surprised that the Bills hired him because they're almost the exact same team that the Jets are. Really good defense, no quarterback. And he was going to get paid for a year. I don't know about you, Taz, but if somebody said to you, hey, Taz, what do you think about this idea? I'll pay you $4 million for the next 12 months, and you don't have to do anything.
I love that.
Yeah, me too.
I'm in.
Me too. For some reason, football coaches are a different breed, and they feel like if their faces are off TV or that they're going to lose some of their luster. But there are two names, Herm Edwards being one, and John Gruden, that were both high paid coaches that came to ESPN, and they realized I don't got to work 20 hours a day. I'm more popular than I was when I coached. And I can still make, you know, close or at least, you know, in the ballpark of what I was making before, and I'm not losing my health. I'm not going to die as early as I was.
There's no pressure on them. There's no pressure.
Exactly. You never lose a game.
Yeah.
You never lose a game. But Rex Ryan's a different breed. I think he loves the lifestyle. He loves being in front of the cameras every Tuesday and Wednesday. And plus, they paid him $5.5 million a year. He got a raise coming out 4-12.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable. NFL's a beautiful place.
And look at me. You know, for years I was a Jet fan. And then what happened was I got mad at the Jets. Really pissed off this year.
No.
Early pissed off in the year. Early. And I'm done. Done with the Jets. I'm now a Bills fan. This is a shoot.
Stop it. I swear to God, bro.
I'm a Bills fan all year. And they shit the bed too. Right? So I'm a Bills fan. Then Marone's gone. Next thing you know, who they hire? Rex Ryan. I'm like, I can't get a break.
Now, Marone to me, now the guys are just teasing you. That's what the football guys are doing. They're just making fun of Taz.
They are.
But most people don't know the particulars a lot of times of contracts. But years ago, Bill Parcells, when he went to the Dolphins, he put in his contract that if they changed ownership, he could walk away and he'd get every dime that he was owed. He was owed $12 million when they sold the team. They wrote him a check. He walked out the door.
God bless him.
Exactly. Doug Marone did the same thing.
God
bless him. You change ownership, and the new owners have to pay him. So he had $4 million, walked out the door, they paid him, and he did not, though, get a head coaching job, as we know. So I don't think it's worked out like he thought, but certainly it worked out for Rex Ryan.
Yeah, it definitely did. And I don't think Marone would end up being a good TV guy like Rex Ryan would have, but don't matter. Sounds like Marone's kind of laying on some beach somewhere in the Bahamas and he owns the island. So, bro, let me ask you, speaking about, like, let's go back in time. A little back in time, if you remember your WWE days.
Of course.
You know, bro, I know that's what we want to talk about here. And it's the thing is, like, look, you've been through so much as an announcer. Then you became an on-air personality. But I think people also remember the chemistry, that special chemistry that you had with The Rock. I mean, it was kind of weird, but it worked. Was that what kind of, like, I want to know, like, whose idea was it? Or how did you end up from being an announcer to a true on-air personality, and was it because of the chemistry with The Rock, or how'd that work?
Well, I think at some point, And I'll never forget the day that Vince approached me. I was working out in the gym at the WWE building, and I'm 6'3", you know, 250 pounds. And, you know, for a while, a lot of people don't realize this, but when we shot the interviews with The Rock and with whoever else, I would have to spread my legs because Vince was adamant that he didn't want me taller than the guys that I was interviewing.
That's why
he
should have used me for that.
Well, you would have beaten up everybody that you interviewed. So I'll never forget, they were trying to come up with some different angle to kind of shock people. And so prior to SummerSlam in 2003, he walked up to me and he's like, listen, we have this idea, but you would have to start training in the ring, and we want to make you a character. We believe you're big enough to make it believable.
So who came? Kevin Dunn?
Vince.
Oh, Vince. Okay.
Vince, yeah. And plus, we think that you could learn enough to make it look legit and be in there and take, you know, build it up to where the fans hate you so much because of your tongue and the way you talk.
Right.
And then beat you up right at the last minute when they want to see that. I said, you know what, I'm game. Let's give it a shot. And what we decided to do was SummerSlam 2003. It was Shane McMahon against Eric Bischoff. And for weeks leading up to that, I was interviewing Bischoff at all kinds of different places so that when we got to SummerSlam, people were like, oh, there's coaches just out there again to interview the winner.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget JR. I could hear him, 10 feet away going, oh, there's coach again. How arrogant is this that he thinks Bischoff's going to beat Shane McMahon, that he would come out to get an interview and be waiting here? And you talk about heart pounding, that the first thing you're going to do as far as being physical, legitimately physical, is hit Shane McMahon 4 or 5 times with a steel chair. And that's what they told me that I was going to do.
Wow.
So all day, I'm a nervous wreck. And I was like, if I miss, then my career is over.
Yeah.
Absolutely over.
Oh, yeah.
So it came time in the match. Shane was thrown out, and I said, you know what? Let's ride or die, man. Let's ride or die. And I closed up that steel chair, and I got to tell you, man, it felt fantastic. It felt so good.
Wait, you didn't like Shane?
No. It was just, I know. But it was short-lived because, as you know, Shane, as great of a performer as he was, he didn't know how to, I guess, pull punches.
No.
Or in this case, pull kicks. Because I get thrown back in the ring because here comes Stone Cold Steve Austin, and all of a sudden I get kicked in the kidneys as hard as I could possibly imagine. And Taz, I couldn't breathe for 10, 15 seconds, and I thought in my head, this is how it all ends. It's all going to end right here, right now. I did my chair shot, and now I'm going to take a kidney shot and die.
And this is supposed to be fake. What happened?
Yeah, and anybody that thinks that wrestling is fake, I just want to punch him in the face. And so luckily, the breath came back, but the kicks kept coming. And so everything was fine, obviously, but it was a very, very stressful but fun first night of and I remember fans back at the hotel, they're like, my God, we've never seen that before. We never saw it coming, because that's what wrestling fans love.
Yep.
They love being surprised when they think they know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And
well,
that's the beauty of the business.
And it is the beauty of the business. But as you also know, behind the scenes, that's the toughest part about the business creatively, is coming up with some original stuff that's never been, because so much stuff has been done.
That's
with
right.
All the companies, you know what I'm saying? So it's so tough. But, you know, while you were doing your thing, I mean, while we were together, I should say, in WWE, we were there at the right time. I mean, especially now, I came in 2000, or January 2000. When did you come in? I think it was a little bit after me or before.
No. I came in, I started traveling, because I'll never forget this, because your fans are going to love this story. I'll never forget this, because back when you came in, there were still a lot of guys, and most of them from the ECW, that what we like to call live the gimmick. Remember? I mean, the Dudley boys, Bubba Ray really was a heel 24/7.
Yes, he still is, by the way.
I know. And so there were a lot of talent that during the day, you have people at the building be able to see you, whatnot, didn't want people to see you out of character. So I'll never forget. I started in August of 99. So I'd been there 4 or 5 months.
Okay, yeah, you were before.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the, you know, it was starting to leak out. They were starting the promos, all those different things. And people thought Taz was coming. And so, well, we're not sure. Are they pulling a swerve? But I always felt like one of my roles was kind of to welcome people to the company. And the building where you and I met doesn't even exist anymore. The New Haven Coliseum in New Haven, Connecticut.
Yes, sir.
And I'll never forget this because you were sitting there eating all by yourself. Shut which was your norm. And I remember rounding the corner and somebody says, you know, maybe you should go like welcome him. Just say, because I ran this room on the road, remember where we did all the interviews and pre-tapes, right?
Prof and those guys.
Right, yeah, all those guys, yeah. So I was like, you know what, I'll introduce myself, say, hey, listen, you know, there's going to be times where I'm going to need you and then shoot this and shoot that. And so I walk up and I go, hey, Taz. Hey, man, I'm the coach. Nice to meet you. Stuck out my hand. You looked at it like it had 8 fingers on it, and you said, so? And there was an awkward silence. You didn't say anything else. I turned around and walked away, and I was like, damn. It's all true. Everything they say about him is true. And I'm as scared right now as I've ever been in my professional life.
You're killing me.
True story. And so, obviously, you know, we worked on our relationship as time went on.
No doubt, man.
But you definitely, anybody that has ever embodied being who they were more than you, I haven't met them.
Well, that's... Thank you, I think.
It's an absolute compliment.
Yeah, maybe. No, here's the thing on that. All kidding aside, bro, recently, like on one of my shows here, I talked about, I actually had Van Damme on the show, and I apologized to Van Damme at the top of the interview because I was such an asshole during the ECW years to everybody, like you just kind of described, I guess, in WWE too. But I apologized for my immaturity and living the gimmick and all that stuff. And Van Damme said, you know, he got it, but he said, you know, that's part of why guys make it. And during our era, me and Rob back in the day, that's why you made it, because you kind of had to live that gimmick a little bit to really bring it out. But I apologize now that I didn't shake your hand, bro. I'm sorry.
Hey, you know what? If I haven't gotten over it in 15 years, that's my problem. That's not a you problem. But I get it. Even to this day, there is a certain level of the fan at home wants to know that the guy they believe in is that guy all the time. They just do. Now, I know Vince doesn't believe that, and he never wanted us to not sign an autograph or take a picture, and most of us did. But I still believe on some level the fans want to have – they don't want to see behind the curtain. They don't want to see Oz. They want to believe in that Oz exists. And so I don't think that was the worst thing in the world at that time, but you realized it and moved on, and I didn't think it was a big deal. I really didn't, because I got it. You got to look out for yourself. And in pro wrestling, it's all about you and your brand. Nobody's going to do it but you.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, yeah. Dude. Like, you were in a very unique position because you were in WWE originally and for a long time as strictly a broadcaster, and you helped produce things behind the scenes. But you got to witness, during its heyday, during the hot time, how competitive it was in that locker room and the sharks that were floating around everywhere.
I've never seen anything like it. And there was a level of competition when I got there because Rock was at an all-time high, Stone Cold was at an all-time high, Undertaker, Triple H, you came in, Jericho was brand new, Edge and Christian and the Hardy Boys were having this unbelievable back and forth with the ladder matches that were being introduced.
The Dudleys got in there with them, yeah.
Yeah, Dudleys come in, and so, I mean, we just ripped off 10 or 12 guys right there. And when you're talking pay-per-view, pay-per-views and how guys got paid and bonuses and having a match at WrestleMania where the money was just astronomical for one night, it created an atmosphere where even though there weren't a lot of physical altercations backstage because Vince just wouldn't put up with that.
Of course.
Guys were scheming because you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars on the line if they were able to get into a spot, work a program, and be in a main event spot or become a champion. And I'm personally proud of myself that I survived 10 years of that because it was dicey and it was difficult and you had to know how to be involved and also have people like you, respect you, and on some level, I think, fear you a little bit.
Yeah. You got to have a certain respect. You got to know the landscape, and that's a big part of what you basically just said. And and you got to stand up for yourself, but you got to be able to. You can't just sing it. You got to be able to bring it. And when it's bring it time, you got to get it done. You know, and but you can't. There's not a lot of trust. You just because we're all independent contractors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's out for themselves, and that's a reason why I'm sitting there by myself and I'm focused on doing my segment the right way because I want to be better than Jericho. I want to be better than The Rock. I want to be better than Austin. I want to be better than all these guys. I mean, you need the machine to help you, as you know. I mean, I had a little help, and then the help stopped, but I was lucky enough to segue into being, you know, an announcer, which I want to thank you because, you know, I got to tell you, guys like you and Michael Cole a lot, because I work with Cole a lot, as you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But you guys helped me because you guys are legitimate announcers, and I learned, you know, a lot from, and JR, of course, too, but I got to say, I mean, you helped me a lot. Like, when we would call those half shit shows, man, like whatever they were, like Velocity or Jack, we had fun, right? But I learned like the ins and outs of doing like broadcasting because I was green as hell at that, you know.
Well, you were smart, and here's why you were smart, because you realized that at some point, especially with the danger of the moves that guys were doing post 2000 to take it to a different level, that at some point your body was going to break down. At some point, for your family, for your own personal health, you're going to have to do something else.
Right.
And you realize, though, that you love the sport of wrestling. You wanted to stay in it. How do I stay in it at this level and make the kind of dollars I want to make and be around it without getting in the ring and working matches 4 days a week?
Yeah.
And the shows that people are, oh, that's just jacked, or that's just a tape show that they do back on Thursday. Really? Well, to me, every single show I do to this day is a chance for me to get better. And it's a chance for me to work on my craft. And so that when I get to the big shows, that if I'm doing the 11 o'clock show on Sunday night, which is our biggest show, I know the other shows I did during the week prepare me for that. And that's what you realize, that even though the shows were quote-unquote smaller, that eventually you were going to do Raw or you were going to do SmackDown, and you needed to be prepared for that, and you were. But you couldn't lose your character in the process because that was the whole reason they were putting you in there anyway. You embodied that. You got that, which is why you were so intelligent about how your career was going to move.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But I had a lot of help, and you were one of the guys who helped me, man. And
well, you're thanks. Welcome.
No, really. Welcome. I mean, really. Seriously. I mean, so, like, all your success in WWE and obviously all your current success in ESPN, but, I mean, do you, I'm sure there's got to be times you miss your time being in the sports entertainment world.
Every day.
Really?
Every day.
Wow.
I say this to people. People on Twitter ask me all the time, oh, are you ever going back? Would you ever go back for one night? I would go back tomorrow, but I would never leave ESPN. In a perfect world, and this is an absolute shoot, in a perfect world, I would be a character on Raw on Monday nights, and I would do ESPN Tuesday through Sunday.
Oh, so you want your cake and eat it too? I got
it. Of course. Of course. And between me and you,
and everybody else listening,
the millions of people, there have been discussions periodically, maybe very recently. I'm not confirming anything. We're trying to work something out to where that can happen, and it's certainly not WWE standing in the way. I'll put it that way. But even though I have open-minded bosses, I just don't know if they're quite at a point where they want to see their, you know, one of their top SportsCenter guys on any level being a part of Monday Night Raw. But you never know. I believe this, that when things happen, if you just let it settle, it becomes the norm. And if they would just let me do Monday Night Raw two or three times, that people would be like, oh, there's Coach and there's Coach on Wednesday. If that'll ever happen, I don't know. But I would love, because I missed the performing. And I saw Rock this summer. It was July when his movie Hercules was coming out.
Yeah.
And we talked about it. And I said, it seems like you're happier now that you've decided to come back periodically and do the main events at WrestleMania. And he said, I just missed it so much.
Wow.
That I had to figure out a way. And he said, I probably should have done it back when he left full-time, and I think 03 or 04. But, you know, you have agents, and you have these Hollywood bigwigs, and they're telling you you can be Hollywood's next leading man, and he has been. I mean, he's a bankable star. His movies make a lot of money. But nothing can substitute for 20,000 people at Madison Square Garden. I don't care how much money you make. I don't care how many people watch your movies.
Right.
There's no substitute for that. And I think Rock has figured that out. And you'll always see him on some level be a part of that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the only negative thing on that is that, as you know how this works, the current wrestlers that are humping the road at live events and house shows and, you know, guys like Rock aren't going to be on those shows.
I know.
You know what I mean? And then he comes in and gets the big spot. I love Rock. Look at me. I'm a big fan of his work, personally and professionally. But, you know, that's the only thing. But Rock knows that works. But that's what the business has become. I mean, WWE brings guys in, big acts, all the time for blockbuster, you know, draws at WrestleMania every year. I mean, the guys that are humping the road in, you know, Sacramento, California on a house show or Lansing, Michigan or you know, Amarillo, you know what I mean? Like,
here's what I would say to that. Because I get what you're saying, and the new wrestlers, the new talent that are here right now, here's what they need to understand: that if Rock comes back for WrestleMania and it's six, let's say $50 to buy WrestleMania, and you sell 2 million instead of 1 million, the talent pool for that show is so much higher than it would have been without him. So they're still going to make more money, and if they want to be good enough to be in the main event, then be good enough all year to be in the main event. That's the level you need to get to. Now, Rock's level is a little bit unreachable.
Of course.
You're right?
Yeah.
But if you want to be a main eventer and a world champion and all that, you've got all year, 4 days a week in Amarillo or Bakersfield, right, or whatever you're talking about,
right.
To be a transcendent star. And you need to figure out why you aren't there. Is it my talking? Is it my working?
Of course.
Is it both? Whatever. But bringing Rock in for those big shows, I still think generates more money, and the upside is better than the downside,
right,
of him being there.
No,
that's just how I feel about it.
No, I agree. No, I agree. I'm just giving you the side of how in-ring performers, wrestlers think.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Guys that are humping the road at a popcorn match or the second match on a house show. You know, the guys that are under contract, those are the guys, you know, okay, cool, I'm humping the road. But, you know, you're right. You got to find yourself as a performer. And if you're not getting over with something, you got to shift and move. You got to dip and dodge all the time.
All the time.
To make it work. It never ends. It's a constant evolution, you know, to be successful. And I got to tell you, again, so proud of you and your success, able to be one of the first guys, I mean, to leave our realm of our business, especially as an announcer, and succeed at the level you are and still climbing at a massive household name like ESPN, bro. I'm so proud of you and so happy for you.
That means a lot to me, Taz. I really appreciate that. And all the friends that I've met along the way, you and everybody else, I really feel like it's coming full circle. And I'm as content personally as I think maybe I've ever been, because of professionally I'm where I want to be. And so it's cool to be able to reconnect and not only talk about it, but also look towards the future and hopefully maybe help some other guys to achieve stuff outside of wrestling. But at the same time, never really leave it and keep a foot in there, because I wouldn't be at ESPN, I believe this to be true, if I would not have had the 10 years with Vince and with everybody else and you and WWE. So I'm grateful for that, and I thank God every day that I get to do this and do SportsCenter for sure.
Well, the main reason is you're talented, bro. You've always been talented.
Well, thank you.
Well, that's what it is. I mean, you're talented, and And, you know, I said about, you know, can't just sing, you got to bring it. You bring it. You bring it all the time. You've always been that way. Keep rolling, man, with your stuff. And for those out there, you want to follow Coach, if you're not already, follow him on Twitter, at the Coach ESPN. He's always tweeting stuff, and you're pretty active on that social media. You got the hang of that thing. You do pretty
well.
Good there,
well, they kind of make us. It's fun, but I tell you this: if they would have had Twitter 15 years ago, you and I would have gotten fired, because there are times where I just want to crush people.
Bury everybody.
Every now and then I call it heel Sunday, and I just heel on the idiots, you know. But in all honesty, Taz. And I saw all the press of your podcast, and it does. It sincerely means a lot to me because you're rocking it. I know this thing is going to be huge for you. So I'm just so excited that I was able to be a part of this in its early stages. As I know, this is going to be a huge deal for you. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you, Coach. And you definitely got to come back on here soon. So I mean, I want you back on here again, and I'll come in there, whole Sports Center, and kick somebody's ass or something like that if I can.
That would be fantastic.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, you got some of those guys there like Golic and Mark Slaywich. Those are rugged linemen from the NFL. Those guys are nasty dudes still, you know what I mean? I don't need Ray Lewis coming upside my head dropping me, you know what I mean?
Oh, man. Dude, I tell you what, it's so weird because you remember when we were in wrestling, just real quick, and we'd walk backstage, and depending on the city, you could just see any star just kind of with Shaq or whoever. Well, that's how it is at ESPN. You'll just be walking along, you'll be like, oh, that was just Arnold Palmer. Was that Tiger or was that, you know, Magic Johnson or whatever? It's just a normal Tuesday to see anybody there. So I enjoy that too.
Well, that's why those commercials, whoever produces that stuff or the creative behind those ESPN sports, I don't know if they call it Sports Center.
Yeah, Sports Center commercials, yeah.
That stuff's great. Like in the office behind the scenes, the guy's getting coffee or mascot. I mark out for those things. I love them.
Well, I tell you what, I literally have gotten hot because that's what we did for 10 years. And they still haven't quite grasped how funny they would be if the coach was involved in the Sports Center commercials. So that's my next step, is for them to realize what they have a hidden gem right under their nose that for 10 years.
Well, they do. Really, they do. I mean, that's a great point. Why are you not doing those commercials?
Well, we're fighting an uphill climb. We're working on it.
Well, I need to be your agent and work on this for you.
No doubt. No
doubt.
I'll talk
to Bristol. I'll work this thing out for you. I can do it for you. No charge, bro. We're good.
I would have to walk out with you because I would be fired after you did your deal. That's I know true. How that would work.
Yeah, you're right about that. All right, brother. Look, come back on here soon. Keep
Anytime.
Rolling with your success, man. I'm so happy for you. You're doing great.
Thank you, man. God bless. Thanks, Taz.
All right, Coach. See you, man.
The Human Podcast Machine.
Break time!
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
All right, all right, all right. As they say, the match is over. That's a wrap, ladies and gentlemen. I would like to thank my guest, the coach from ESPN, Jonathan Coachman. Outstanding guest. Got to have him on here again. Loved hearing him. Check him out on ESPN Sports Center, anywhere on ESPN program, and obviously, and maybe in the WWE real soon. We shall see. Also, want to say it's kind of weird, right? No Taz Tale at the end, as I pointed out. I mean, you know, look, not like I said, Taz Tales is getting real popular, and they're not going anywhere. I promise next week there'll be a Taz Tale, which you will dig. And speaking of digging, next week episode I will drop TNA Knockout, Gail Kim, one of the most talented female grapplers, sports entertainers you will find worldwide. Gail Kim, TNA Knockout, will be my guest. Looking forward to this. Gail's great. Nothing but mad respect for her. She's a real cool girl and very talented. And I think that it's going to be another interview that's off the chain, as the boys and girls said a few years ago. It's not a popular term anymore, but it used to be. Off the chain, off the hook, off the chiazane. Anyway, I digress. So that's it. So I want to thank you for downloading and subscribing to the Human Podcast Machine. Please support the other shows here on play.it.
There's a lot of good programming here, and I mean, over 50 shows, maybe just about 50 shows, podcast on play.it. So life coaching stuff, other sports stuff, you know, business stuff, whatever you know suits your fancy. Obviously, the best show is this one right here because of you guys. Human Podcast Machine with yours truly, Taz. We're getting it done because of the support of the great fan base out there in the wacky, crazy world of professional wrestling. I thank you for your support. Keep supporting my show. I do appreciate it. Try and keep it real out here with you. Until next week, I'm Taz. You're not.